This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. The landscape of streaming is changing, and joining me to discuss these changes, as well as reviewing various programs on your favorite streaming services, is Editor-in-Chief of Extremist, Rob Toledo. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, so according to a report done by Diffusion Group, by 2022, all networks will offer their own streaming services. Do you think that's smart?
I think it's less smart and probably just more necessity. This is the future of television. I think we're all moving towards a world where, you know, as a consumer, we're going to want access to our favorite networks and our favorite shows, you know, on all our devices whenever we want to watch them. You know, kind of long gone are the days, or I should say long dwindling are the days of, you know, tuning in at 8 p.m. to watch your favorite sitcom. You know, it's, you know, and I think with the streaming technology that's advanced over the past couple of years, I think the networks are, you know, getting savvy to that. And, you know, I think we're going to see more availability of our favorite shows and content kind of on our phones, on our tablets, on our computers, you know, and of course on the TV, but on demand. And, you know, in order for these networks to, you know, offer this service, you know, they have to build their own streaming services. And, you know, we've seen that only increase over the past couple of years. So I don't think it's going anywhere. That's for sure.
Now, usually when it comes to a cable bill, you know, for me, I max out at like maybe $100. I'm not going to do too much like craziness. If I would take that $100 and allocate it to like a streaming service, how many do you think I could get? A lot, right?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, I mean, you know, like you said, I think the average consumer pays between $80 to $120 for their TV, you know, TV channel selection. With streaming services, you know, the price point that we're kind of seeing is anywhere from about $5 to, you know, $15 per channel. So, you know, I'd say, let's call it an even 10 per channel. So you're looking at probably 10 streaming services, whether that's, you know, Netflix, Hulu, HBO, and then kind of an assortment of your individual channels. You know, I think you can end up, you know, kind of a la carte picking, you know, the networks that you want to watch through a system like that. But, you know, of course, the whole point of cord cutting for a while was to save money. And at some point, I think we're just going to end up spending about as much money as we were on cable on these individual streaming services.
Now, when it comes to a lot of the streaming services, they're now doing a lot of original programming. Do you think because they already can foretell that it's going to be a thing where people are only going to get Netflix for their original programming?
I think that's exactly right. I think with Netflix and Amazon especially, you know, where they don't have, you know, kind of network owners behind the curtain like Hulu does, you know, those networks are going to get, you know, less and less, you know, friendly with their content and they're not going to be selling it to Netflix. Or, you know, or Amazon in that example. So I think, you know, it's really important if Netflix and Amazon want to keep their, you know, their viewers happy, they really have to ramp up the amount of original content they're producing. And of course, we've seen that happening, you know, and Reed Hastings, their Netflix CEO, has come out and said, you know, I think they want 50% of their content original, you know, within the next few years. And I think that they're heading that direction real quick, both because they're creating original content and also because the third-party content owners are, you know, pulling all their content from Netflix, like, you know, Fox and whatnot, like, will typically, you know, are now scaling back how much TV they put on Netflix, and then they, you know, Fox will build their own streaming service and offer those shows up themselves. Hulu, on the other hand, is kind of interesting because they are owned by, you know, Fox and NBC and Disney, and now that Disney bought Fox, Disney basically is the majority owner of Hulu. Now, it's yet to be seen what Hulu's, you know, what Hulu's going to look like in a year or two. But I believe that as it stands right now, the networks are using that as kind of their main release channel for a lot of their programming. Now, as these relationships between the major networks get a little bit, you know, more fragmented, I could see that changing.
As we're going into like original programming, when it comes to the streaming, it's all been really, really good. But at some point, they're going to have a lot of bad stuff. Do you think it's going to come out, the more content they put out, it's going to come out like maybe more than half of it's going to be bad shows?
You know, I've noticed something funny happening on Netflix, and Netflix does produce a lot of good content, I'll say that. But one thing I've noticed over the past couple months, maybe the last year, has been a migration towards, like, reality-style television on Netflix. This is something that I did not expect. I kind of, you know, was thinking Netflix will probably stick to either really highbrow, kind of, you know, big production releases, or maybe some like niche content to target specific audiences that they want to draw in more subscribers for. I did not expect like almost this shift towards, you know, they now have TV shows that are like weekly interview shows, or you know, they have like reality food shows, or you know, I think there's a show called like Ultimate Beastmaster or something, and it's a basically a knockoff of American Ninja Warrior. You know, and it's like this reality TV which is produced cheap and fast. And so, you know, I think with that, we're just going to see the Netflix catalog continue to shift more towards like that. It's going to look like a regular TV network in no time.
Oh man, you know, I was trying to get away from reality shows. I'm not gonna lie. I get so tired of it, you know, it's drama here. And you know, after a while the viewer wakes up and we realize, oh, it's not a reality show, it's all scripted. And then it comes out later, years later, that oh yeah, we scripted that fight. There were, you know, it was just edited really well. And you get kind of sad because it's like I was all pumped up thinking this was some real life and it was all fake.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the reality? And reality, haha. But with, you know, I think what Netflix is looking at is they want a broad spectrum of content, right? And the situation currently with network television is those are cheap and easy to produce TV. And for whatever reason, and you know, you probably need a PhD to understand why this shift is happening, but you know, more and more, a ton of people love tuning into that reality TV, and you know, sorry, Netflix has seen that, and they're, you know, they're adjusting their strategy accordingly.
Well, you know, I'd love My Flavor of Love. Maybe if they bring that back, I'd get all geeked again, right? But in the long run, do you think that people will sit there and say, if I'm, you know, watching reality shows, I might as well just go back to TV?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know. Two points on that. One is, I think if they're paying for a subscription like Netflix, and I think there's kind of an option for everybody on there now, but if they're paying for a subscription on Netflix and the content isn't really meeting the standard that warrants paying that every month, then I do think that people would consider going back to normal television. The other thing, of course, too, is kind of the running joke, and we just talked about it, was, you know, if the price point for paying all these individual streaming services isn't competitive against just a bulk cable package, then kind of what's the point, right? Like, yeah, it's nice to only be paying for, you know, kind of what you want to watch, but if it's the same amount as your cable bill every month, then I could see a shift back towards a standard cable subscription. Or what I think we're more likely to see is these big cable companies, you know, like your Comcasts, going, okay, how can we meet those consumers where they're at? And then shifting their strategy a little bit to be more kind of, you know, stream-only friendly or whatever.
Now, I read an article in Extremist that major TV networks are considering reducing advertisement. Now, I may jump back to TV just for that. Are they doing this because they want to bring more viewers back from the streaming world?
I think so. And there was a recent study on top of that one a year or two ago, and I found it really fascinating, that said there aren't actually more ads on TV than there were a few years ago. But if you ask a consumer if they thought there were, they almost all said yes. They thought there were more ads on TV. And I think the reasoning behind that, I think, is, you know, we're so used to logging into Netflix now, and we can watch 4 or 5 hours of TV, you know, guiltlessly with no advertisements. So then you go watch, you know, a standard broadcast of one of your favorite shows, and all of a sudden there's, you know, what, 9 minutes of commercials in a half an hour broadcast, and it just feels like super overwhelming, right? And so I think, you know, the networks are saying, okay, if consumers are really liking that ad-free, you know, kind of limited advertising model, then maybe we should try it out. But here's the thing. I don't know how the networks will be able to afford, you know, blockbuster television if that's the case. So, you know, they have to pay for it somehow. And if I'm able to just tune into Fox or ABC or NBC free with an antenna, you know, then I'm not paying them necessarily anything. And Netflix has the advantage of, you know, having a $12 monthly subscription, which, you know, extrapolated over their hundreds of millions of subscribers, you know, ends up creating a pretty large budget. So I'm not sure how the networks are going to try and pull this off, but I'll be curious to see if it does draw, if it increases viewership. Or is it a little too late? You know, I don't know. We'll find out.
You know, if they offered, like if Comcast offered, hey, for an extra $25, we'll take off all the ads, I would do it. I'm not going to lie. I would do it for another $25. Like, why not? Kind of like Hulu, right? You pay the low end, you get some ads. Pay high end, no ads.
Isn't it interesting how with Hulu, it's I found this fascinating. I think it's $8 a month for the ad version, and I think it's $12 a month for the ad-free version. So basically what I'm to understand here is that my eyeballs are worth $4 a month in advertisements. Like, hey, wait a minute.
$2 each, right?
Yeah, $2 an eye on their ads. And I had no idea, you know, what their finances look like when it comes to that deal. But, you know, to think that I'm only worth $4 a month if I'm watching ads on their streaming service is a little bit of a hit to my ego, if you will. But that is the easiest $4 I spend every month.
That is true. Now, I don't know the number, but Amazon Video subscribers were revealed. Do you know the number?
Yeah, so this is all leaked, and Amazon would not confirm this. Reuters got access to some proprietary information that said that Amazon currently has 26 million active Prime Video library users. Now, I don't know what active means. I think it was within the last 60 days they had tuned in to watch something on Amazon Prime, which was a number that's considerably higher than I thought it would be. Because, you know, when we took a poll late last year, or maybe early this year, a lot of people who paid for Amazon Prime strictly for the two-day shipping had no idea that they had access to the streaming library. Or they didn't even know that Amazon had a streaming library, which was also pretty funny. If the numbers are to be believed as well, you know, when it comes to U.S.-based Prime subscribers, so people who are just paying that $100 a year or whatever it is to be Prime members, the number is estimated somewhere between like 55 and 65 million. Once again, that's just through third-party analysis. Amazon has not revealed any numbers on this. So, you know, if almost half of your consumers are have access to the streaming library, that's a pretty good chunk.
It is. I'll be honest, I thought it would be a lot lower because I'm a guilty party to that. I didn't know I could watch videos for like a year after I had Prime, and it was by accident too.
Sure. And once again, I don't know how these numbers were calculated either. Like, there could have been a lot of accidentals. You know, sometimes when you log into Amazon.com, the first thing you see is like, you know, watch this show. And maybe people are pressing play and having no idea what's going on. And then Amazon's metrics are like, so yes, we got one more person using our service. But, you know, I do think that Amazon is pushing heavily on marketing this as a add-on to their, you know, the Prime membership. I think Jeff Bezos, their CEO, has argued pretty heavily, like, he wants Amazon Video to be competitive with Netflix and HBO, and, you know, they're dumping a ton of money into it right now. So these numbers don't surprise me too much, but, you know, if you compare those 26 million reported numbers, reported subscribers or active subscribers of the Prime Video library to Netflix's, I think the last number I've heard is around 120 million global subscribers. Amazon has a ways to go.
Yeah, no way. Like, when you put it in that kind of perspective, like, that's Starbucks money right there. That's not a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
Another streaming service, which I never really considered to be a streaming service, is YouTube Red. Do you guys consider that to be like a streaming thing now?
I'll say yes, just because I think if you look at the Wikipedia page of YouTube Red, it says it's a streaming service, so we'll give them that benefit of the doubt. YouTube Red is, just for those that aren't aware, is, you know, kind of this little, it was almost a side project of YouTube and Google to kind of release a subscription ad-free version of YouTube. It came with, like, you know, a Spotify competitor. You could listen to Google Play Music with without ads. You know, you can watch YouTube videos without ads. And then you can also get access to kind of a, you know, like a, I guess, premium content on YouTube. My only kind of gripe with it, my large gripe with it is that most of the content they put out is like just completely uninteresting to me. It's kind of like they'll take their the people who have done well building up their own organic YouTube audiences, and then they just throw some money at them to make like a premium show for the YouTube service. So, you know, I'm not like a big YouTuber. Like, I don't watch a ton of, I'm not like a subscriber to any, like, you know, big YouTube streaming accounts. So I'm not super interested in their content. Now, that's not to say people aren't. You know, as I think we've seen over the last year or two, like with the advent of like live streaming video games and you know, big review channels, like these people are bringing in big money and big revenue for YouTube. And so it makes sense that YouTube would want to kind of keep their homegrown talent, you know, within YouTube. Like, otherwise, let's say somebody comes along, builds up a YouTube channel, and then Netflix comes knocking and goes, hey, why don't you come make a show for us? You know, YouTube wants to keep that kind of you know, homegrown audience within YouTube's walls.
Now, I do like to watch a lot of YouTube videos because I am a sucker for, like, the speed running of games. How fast can you finish Super Mario Brothers 3, right? Because
sure.
I love that kind of stuff. But and I have three different ad blockers, so I don't pay for YouTube Red, and I still get it commercial free. But I came across this one commercial that somehow snuck its way through all my ad blockers. It was Cobra Kai. Did you have a chance to see the trailer?
I have seen the trailer. So if memory serves, this is a kind of a, not a rehash, but like a revisit to the dojo from Karate Kid, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to be like a, go ahead, yeah.
Oh, no, I was going to say it looks weird. I'm not sure how to take it. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, will I tune in? Probably not. I've yet to watch like a YouTube, like a web serial that I've thought like, this is awesome. You know, kind of similar to you. Like I do enjoy tuning in and watching, you know, a variety of YouTube videos, but the serials just haven't really grabbed me. I don't think YouTube is kind of bet big on it yet. I think they're kind of throwing small budgets at these shows. And maybe that's what they're doing. They're kind of grabbing a segment of online, you know, video viewership and just saying, we'll just focus on this. Netflix and Amazon and HBO and all those others can, you know, duke it out over the big stuff, and we'll just own the, you know, the web serial market. Now, Amazon, of course, is getting competitive with Twitch. You know, I mean, Twitch has one of those stories where if you had told me somebody would pay $1 billion to buy a website where people stream themselves playing video games, I would have thought you were crazy, but that investment has paid off huge already for Amazon. You know, they're drawing in the biggest names, and people are tuning in, like, in just massive crowds, and so, you know, I think, you know, YouTube is probably looking at that and going, okay, we gotta make sure we protect our own audiences here, especially when it comes to the gaming crowds.
When it comes to this particular show, Cobra Kai, I don't know. It looks stupid, and it makes Daniel as the bad guy. I thought that was kind of weird. So am I gonna watch it? I probably am. I'm not gonna lie. I've watched worse. So
So am I.
So I may peek at it somehow. I may have I may buy it for, you know, YouTube Red for 1 month and then watch binge Cobra Kai and then cancel it the next month. But I have to see it. I just want to know how bad this is going to be. Speaking of bad, did you have a chance to watch Game Over Man on Netflix?
Oh yeah, of course. where do I start? Speaking of, I've watched worse. Yes. Okay. I'm going to start this off by saying I love the Workaholics guys. In theory, like I thought the first couple seasons of the Workaholics were great. You know, just a goofy show. It went way off the rails for me, and I think I stopped watching by like season three. And apparently, they went on for a couple more seasons. So, of course, when I saw the three guys pop up in this like stupid action movie, I think my expectations were reasonably set for, this is just going to be terrible, but I'm going to watch it anyways. And, you know, I sat there for an hour and a half and I watched the whole thing without stopping. And, it didn't take itself too seriously. And sometimes that's for, you know, sometimes that makes for a good piece of entertainment. I'm not sure I would even say that was the case here, but, you know, I watched it. So whatever, take that for what it's worth.
I couldn't watch more than, I think, a half hour of it. And I was like, I just had to stop. And it was after, what was it? The bad guys came into the hotel room and I forgot the guy's name, but he was, he put himself in the closet and had a belt around his neck and was autoerotic. How do you say that? And it was just like a bunch of penis jokes. And I couldn't, I was like, that's it. Right. I was like, I can't do it. It was funny, but it wasn't funny. And I was like, this set the pace for the whole movie, I imagine.
When I get a text from my mother asking me what she should watch on Netflix, this is not going to be on that list.
Now, I didn't watch the whole thing, but was it a diehard ripoff? Or was it, they kind of poked fun at it, right?
Yeah, I mean, they poked fun at kind of all big action movies. You know, they knew what they were doing. Here's the thing. I'm sure Netflix was just like, hey, these three guys are popular from that show on Comedy Central, let's just give them, you know, X million dollars to make a movie, and they did. That's what they get.
Now, any chance, did you see Santa Clara Diet?
Yeah, so that's, the second season came out this last month. It's starring, like, Drew Barrymore, and memory serves, she's now a zombie who is still alive and living with her, maybe not a zombie, but she has the taste for blood and is still living with her family and wants to be a good person. I liked the idea, and I enjoyed the first season well enough. second season was just kind of like, is this necessary? Does the show really need to keep going? You know, I think that the thing I struggle with the most is it feels like, did you ever watch the show Weeds?
A little bit, yeah. It got boring.
It felt like the exact same model of that show, like, you know, one of the parents in a household, you know, goes bad and the family wants to keep together. And it kind of just feels like that same style. And it didn't really grab my attention in the second season, though, that's for sure. So I haven't even finished the second season yet.
I finished it. I like they answered some questions that I had, which was nice. Most shows tease it until like season 5. They kind of finished it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I appreciate it. But you're right. If this goes beyond season 3, maybe a season 4, I'm going to be very upset about this. Any chance you ever see the documentary Take Your Pills or no?
Yeah, I did. I just watched that. It just came out not too long ago. Really good documentary, you know, kind of about ADHD medication and the history of the diagnosis and the drugs and, you know, all the kids who are using it. And, you know, I remember when I was in college, it was like, you know, I actually never ended up taking it because I would be too nervous about what it would do to me. But, you know, there was tons of kids around me all the time who were taking it to study and to work and, you know, and just to think about how easy it was to get at the time. And the documentary displayed that really well, I thought. Did you end up watching it?
Yeah, I watched it. I was diagnosed with ADHD as a kid, so I ended up taking Adderall as a kid, and I like in the end, which I felt was kind of like it hit home a little bit. People with the disability, you kind of get at a level playing field, but somebody who doesn't have it and they take it, now it's like, well, shit, you moved the finish line. Thanks. Now I got to work even harder.
Yeah, and that, isn't that kind of the whole point the documentary was almost making, was like, it's not about the medicine, it's about like how competitive we all are in the workplace or in school. And, you know, I thought that was a very interesting angle the documentary took, was like, you know, I think the one was that the anonymous investment banker who was saying that him and his coworker were popping Adderall for, you know, 2.5 days straight until one of them had a seizure and ended up in the hospital. And I'm like, that's terrifying.
What I thought was terrifying was when his coworker in the hospital was like, man, my parents are trying to get me to quit. Could you bring me the files from work? It was like, he still wanted to go.
That was terrible.
The reason I bring it up is because, do you think that Netflix is going to do more documentaries like this? Because it kind of feels like I've been seeing more and more in my queue lately.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that one of the things that I've noticed more than anything has been, well, they've been creating their own original Netflix documentaries a lot recently. Now, I remember like 3 or 4 years ago, Netflix was the home for documentaries. You know, like even before that, like, it was kind of tough to find documentaries to watch. You know, like, they're not on TV very often. It's not like you go to the video store and rent one. So Netflix just kind of became the de facto home where everyone would put out documentaries after they had, you know, done their small theater runs or whatever. Then, you know, I think that ended up becoming very popular content on Netflix. And so I think we're going to see more and more of that in the near future here, no problem. I think, you know, they do well on Netflix. I think Netflix does a good job giving the documentary film crews, you know, a good budget and a good direction and saying, go make a movie, and they do. And I think that, you know, we're going to see a lot more. You know, did you watch Making a Murderer?
Yes, I did.
Like with this, I think we're going to see a lot of that stuff where it's like these big serialized kind of episodic documentaries where it's, you know, 10-part, you know, documentaries. And I think that, you know, as a subscriber, I'd be happy to watch more of that type of content. I love that stuff.
Now, for April, is there anything that's coming out that we should keep an eye out for?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give you one from each of the big services. On Hulu, the one I'm most excited for is the Emmy Award-winning Handmaid's Tale. Season 2 is coming out. Now, I'm a little bit nervous here because now we're departing from the book, you know, and so the writers are without source material. And, you know, but, you know, that comes out April 25th on Hulu. I'm excited to kind of check it out and see which direction they go. Amazon has kind of an underrated show going into its 4th season right now called Bosch. It's a kind of a cop procedural, but really well done, kind of gritty. The 4th season's coming out April 13th. And then the one I'm probably, of all of these, I'm most excited for is Netflix is releasing the first season of their Lost in Space show that's coming out April 13th. That's just going to tickle that nostalgia bug for me in a big way. You know, I watched the trailer. The special effects look awesome so far. Really excited for that one.
All right, cool. Well, thanks so much, Rob, for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Yeah, swing by the website, extremist.com. Anytime you're looking for news on Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, any of the big streaming services, we've hopefully got it for you.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.